Worried about letting someone else pick out the perfect avocado for your perfect impress them on the third date guacamole? Well, good thing Instacart shoppers are as picky as you are. They find ripe avocados like it's their guac on the line. They are milk expiration date detectives. They bag eggs like the 12 precious pieces of cargo they are. So let Instacart shoppers overthink your groceries so that you can overthink what you'll wear on that third date. Download the Instacart app to get free delivery on your first three orders while supplies last. Minimum $10 per order. Additional terms apply.
Welcome to the Power Cat Podcast, GoPowerCat.com's Kansas State Athletics Show. Make sure you're subscribing to our show at Apple, Spotify, Amazon, or wherever you get your podcasts. Now, from the GPC studios, here's your host, Go Power Cat publisher, Tim Fitzgerald.
Welcome to the Power Cat Questions Podcast, sponsored by Fridge Wholesale Liquor. I am Tim Fitzgerald, publisher of GoPowerCat.com, joined by Zach Carlson. And on the line with us is Mr. Cole Carmody, who is in Kansas City. Mr. Ryan Gilbert is at work. We're dividing up the duties this week because I am leaving on vacation. And so we're recording on Tuesday. As I said, we're sponsored by the Fridge Wholesale Liquor. Make sure you stop into the fridge whenever you stop into Manhattan. It is the largest and best liquor store by a mile in the world. In the world. I said the world. I might have exaggerated. There might be one in Hong Kong or Vegas that's better. But in my experiences, I would always shop at the fridge if given a choice. It's right at the corner of Claflin and Westport here in Manhattan. Make sure you stop by. It's in the old Blockbuster building where they have Blockbuster good deals on booze. Cole, what's going on in Kansas City? Speaking of booze, you can buy Boulevard products at the fridge. Didn't you just tour Boulevard Brewing?
I did, yes. We have some family in town, and so decided to... Surprisingly, the family from Kentucky was the ones who said, hey, let's go visit the brewery. And me, who's lived in Kansas City my whole life, having never visited, said, that sounds like a great idea. On top of that, I also have baseball practice tonight, so I made sure that I limited myself on the actual product to make sure that, you know, didn't want to have any conflicts of interest.
Very disappointing. I would have limited myself to 12 beers. 12. Did you have one that you particularly liked? Did you sample a little bit?
So, yeah, they had a bunch of stuff. There was it was a whiskey barrel type of beer, a dark beer. Not a big dark beer fan. I tried it. I was really impressed. And they also have the canned mixed drinks, kind of what we sampled on the podcast last week, actually. Speaking of samples, I know somebody said, hey, you should have a podcast called The Sample. I don't know. They sell those in Manhattan. I'm assuming they sell them at the fridge. If not, you can go on the fridge and find out, right? So there we go.
Check it out at the fridge. Cole, I bet your relatives from Kentucky enjoyed the whiskey barrel beer.
Yes, that's exactly what they got.
Yep. Yeah, of course. Of course. Zach, how are our questions?
Pretty good. We're going to keep it short so Fitz has a limited workload.
Oh, I like it.
For this week.
I like it.
But they're good. I think they're very good for what we got. So
on today's agenda for myself is I've already recorded a great Q&A podcast with Ryan Wallace and Avery Johnson. I was just kind of hanging out listening. That appeared Wednesday at Go Power Cat. This is the questions podcast that is popping up Thursday morning in your lifetimes. And then we'll have the overtime for Friday. Busy day. I would love to get in a life of Fitz, but I couldn't find anyone to book on short notice because I'm not a planner, Zach. I'm just not. Didn't do a good job. We'll get those rolling here in June.
It is almost June. It's June now that you're listening to this podcast.
It is June. It's June. Let's get going with your questions from Wabash Station. Here is Zach Carlson.
From Emarica, predict Kansas State's 2022 football wins and losses.
Oh, I'm probably going to have to go with 15-0.
That's a lot of wins.
It's just as easy. That way I don't have to go through the games, and I can just list off all the wins. They're all wins.
So he wants us to go one by one each game, I'm assuming?
That is about what I would anticipate.
Okay, let's South Dakota, Missouri, Tulane.
3-0.
I think they should be 3-0. The only game, obviously, that you have any kind of pause there is Missouri. But I did put it this way. If Gary Bohannon, the Baylor transfer quarterback, I know he was looking at Mizzou. If he would have gone to Mizzou strictly based off of quarterback play, that game would have given me a little bit more pause. But the fact that you're playing it at home, I think gives K-State the advantage. So I'm going to say 3-0.
Okay. Then they go to Oklahoma. I love this. Starting off the Big 12 with Oklahoma kind of stinks. But this, again, reminds me of the year where Spencer Rattler was the new quarterback. K-State got him. They beat him early in the season. Now they get Brent Venables in a rebuilt roster.
I just hope there's no other parallels to K-State playing OU first.
Yeah.
Is that season.
Yeah. So I think they'll lose, but I'm not going to be shocked if they win.
I think this game's interesting to me because, I'm not too confident. I feel like every single time that Oklahoma is good, it is when they have a returning quarterback. Even look at the Spencer Rattler situation. I mean, those last 2 years, if you want to say Caleb Williams, he wasn't a returner. He's obviously gone. They had the 1 year of Spencer Rattler where K-State beat them. When they have a returning quarterback, I guess you can throw Jalen Hurts even into that mix, right? I mean, it feels like whenever there is a new quarterback at Oklahoma, K-State has a very good chance to win. I'm not going to go out on a limb and predict a W in this game simply because I think the talent level of Oklahoma is better than the talent level of K-State. But I'm also not sold on Dylan Gabriel. As many questions as there are about Adrian Martinez, I have those questions with Dylan Gabriel. I mean, you talk about coming off of an injury. He had a season-ending injury last year. He didn't even play that much. So there's lots of question marks for Oklahoma. As much as we talk about question marks for K-State, there's a lot of question marks for Oklahoma. You know, out of some of these road games, it wouldn't surprise me if K-State won, but I have to pick Oklahoma in this game.
Yeah, go OU for the same reasons.
Okay, so
Fitz, we got Fitz said.
The Cats at 3-1, 0-1 in the conference to come home and play Texas Tech, also with a new coach, right? No, 2 years in on their coach.
No, that's new coach.
New year,
that's
right. New year.
Yep. They fired.
That's right. He's
mid-season.
Been around, but
actually, yeah. They fired him right after K-State beat them last year.
The unthinkable. Will they fire their coach after K-State beats Tech again? I doubt it. But K-State will beat Tech.
Yes.
Agreed.
Okay.
4-1.
4-1. Then they go. This is crazy. This is a 4-5 year for Kansas State, meaning they have 4 home games and 5 road games in the 9-game Big 12 schedule. But they start with 3 out of 4 on the road in the conference. So after getting Tech at home, they go to Iowa State and TCU in back-to-back games. There's an off week in between those two. But where do we sit on getting wins at Iowa State and TCU?
I think they split them. I don't think that there's I don't think there's any strong argument to make they're going to beat TCU or they're going to beat Iowa State or they're going to lose, you know, one of those two games. You know, I don't have any specifics there. I just think that, you know, over the course of a season, it's really easy to sit here and say, hey, you know, I don't think Iowa State's as good as they're going to as they've been. You know, K-State's going to for sure win that game. And then they go off a week and then saying, hey, you know, TCU's also has really never been what they've always claimed to be. I think K-State can win that one. I think that it's, you know, over that 3-week span, especially with the bye week, I think they still split. I think that you kind of got to group those games together and say after those two, they're going to be 5-2.
Cole?
I look at this as a little bit different than you, Zach. I think if you want to have a successful season, you have to win both of these games. Like if they want to do the things that they have talked about, I know there was an article that came out in The Athletic that talked about, hey, maybe K-State's a 10-win team. I know a lot of us at Go Power Cat are, you know, split. I know Fitz thinks ceiling maybe is 10 or maybe even 11 wins. I'm kind of in that boat. You're maybe more 8 or 9 win teams. So I think if they want to have that ceiling that they want to have, you have to win both of those games.
For sure.
I agree.
For sure. You need to win both of them to reach that ceiling. But I think, you know, I think if you're talking about ceilings, I think the percentage chance of you hitting your ceiling is probably closer to 10 to 20% than it is, you know, 50 or 60%. So I think that you got to just use some math and some logic, I guess, so to speak. And that's kind of where I'm at is, you know, I don't know, you know, if they're going to win or lose both of them, but I think that saying, you know, 1-1 over that stretch, it may not get you to 10 wins, but I think that if you look at the schedule and you say, what is going to be acceptable to the K-State fan at that point. I think being 5-2 after seven games, you know, however way you cut it up, is significant.
Let's put it this way, too. If you beat Iowa State on the road with a bye week following that, I think the expectation is you have to beat TCU. So, I mean, I guess, you know, when we get closer to the games, obviously, it's a lot easier to predict. I'll go ahead and say that they lose to Iowa State just because it is hard to win in Ames. I think that has the potential to be a night game. I mean, you guys, maybe it's been a night game last year.
I'm going to say it's going to be 11 a.m. Nice and bright.
I've totally changed. The old man just wants to get the football over with. Let's go 11 and let's get on the road and home.
I'm tired of night games in Ames, mostly because they've been cold or rainy.
Yeah.
Just
I'll say a loss at Iowa State and a win at TCU.
Okay. Here's my thing. If Chris Klieman wants to have his program turn the corner and become one of the better ones in the conference, if that's something they're hopeful of, then maybe they need to start stringing together some wins. You know, you can't just have a win here, a win there, loss, a win there, loss. These are three winnable games in a row. You got Tech at home. You go to Iowa State with a new quarterback and a lot of turnover on that roster. And you go to TCU with a new coach. If they can rattle off these three wins, I think it'll just mean more than three wins in a row for the program. I think it'll usher in that maybe Kansas State is joining the elites in this conference, at least in the short term. I'm not ready to go there. So I will go with 2-1 in this stretch. I don't know if it'll be Iowa State or TCU. I think Cole's right on that evaluation. If you win at Iowa State, I don't see them coming off an off week and losing at TCU. So I will take Iowa State very reluctantly to beat the Cats. And as Zach said, get to 5-2 in the conference. Next up is a home game with Oklahoma State, which is why I see those three games as so important.
Yeah, I think they're really important, but I think that Oklahoma State is going to be one of those top two teams in the conference, and I think aside from, you know, that first OU game, if you're able to win that, even if you don't win it, it's not that big of a deal. But, you know, if Oklahoma State comes in and they're, you know, top of the conference, I mean, that could be a potential, I don't want to say College game day game, but one of the top five games of, you know, the Big 12 conference season, for being a pivotal game to kind of shape what the Big 12 championship could be. Because if K-State's 5-2 going into that game, realistically, they need to win it if they want any sort of chance at being in the championship game.
Agreed. Cole?
I'm actually going to take K-State in this scenario where K-State's 5-2. This just screams like a game where Oklahoma State's probably like a 10-point favorite, an 8 or a 9-point favorite. And, you know, everybody's picking against K-State. Oklahoma State is the sexy pick. You know, they made the Big 12 championship last year. They're the pick that everybody is going to be going with to be that team in the Big 12 this year. And this feels like a game where K-State finally breaks through, beats Oklahoma State. They've had so much frustration against the Cowboys in the past with Chris Klieman. I just feel like it's bound to happen. And State is competitive in the losses to Oklahoma and Iowa State. I definitely could see a world where K-State wins that game.
Okay. I'm going to go with K-State to beat Oklahoma State, too. I feel like that's a game, a series that Chris Klieman needs to get over the hump with. And no matter what he does, unless they're absolutely collapsing in those games leading up to that game with Oklahoma State, I think K-State wins this. We will see on that.
So are you guys keeping track of your own wins and losses in your head?
Yeah.
Okay. Because I'm going to take Oklahoma State.
Okay.
I think we're going to differ here. Okay, I'm going to go Oklahoma State. I think that Oklahoma State, you know, even though I think K-State is extremely due for a win in this series, you know, past performances, I don't know if they're necessarily indicative of future performance, but I don't feel like I can't sit here today and say that, yes, K-State's going to win that game.
Here's Oklahoma State's schedule leading up to K-State. Their non-conference is Central Michigan, Arizona State goes to Stillwater, and Arkansas Pine Bluff goes to Stillwater. So they've got all three of their games this year at home in the non-con. Then they open at Baylor. What a statement game right out of the gate for the conference. I almost feel like the conference wants to get the elimination game out of the way. See who beats who here and who's in the driver's seat. They would never do that with Oklahoma and Texas. No. Texas Tech then goes to Stillwater. They go to to Fort Worth on K-State's off weekend, and then they play host to Texas the week before they come to Manhattan. That might play a role. That's a pretty rugged open for Oklahoma State. So Cole and I believe at this point have the Cats at 6-2, and you are at 5-3.
5-3.
Okay. They then go to Texas, so they swap opponents. Oklahoma State. They have Texas coming in, and I don't see any way Colin Klein loses this game. After what happened last year, I don't think that he's going to put a stinky product out there like the offense was last year. I think K-State wins this game no matter what state of affairs Texas has going. Even if the Longhorns somehow are back, K-State wins.
Well, I don't think the Longhorns are going to be back, so go Cats.
Yeah, I'm with you guys. I kind of am of the mindset that this is one of those games where there's going to be a ton of motivation. Quite honestly, you know, Fitz just said we both have K-State at 6-2. If somehow they're 4-4, even 3-5, I just don't see any way K-State, unless there's a ton of injuries, I don't see them losing this game. I just feel like this is a statement game. And there's so many kids. We've talked about it before. So many kids on Texas's roster, or K-State's roster, that are from Texas that weren't even looked at by Texas. And right. We know how big of a motivating factor that is for those kids. So, yeah, I mean, as it sits today, I don't care if Texas is undefeated and K-State has 4 wins. I still think K-State's going to win that game.
Now we're coming down the stretch. Back-to-back road games. They go to Baylor. They go to West Virginia. And they close with Kansas. I love that game is in that Thanksgiving week. I absolutely love that. I hope they leave that there just because it's more tangible to go to the game if you're a fan. If you want to go to a road game, it's just down the road. If you want to have a home game, the other fans can come. I don't like asking fans to go travel far away for Thanksgiving. I think K-State will lose at Baylor. I think Baylor's going to be pretty good. West Virginia, I've never seen a fan base more fired up for a football team that everyone else thinks is going to stink.
Nebraska just, fans?
West Virginia lost like half of its roster to the damn transfer portal, and they think they're going to be the best they have in years, and I just don't see how that works. That can work in basketball, but I don't see how you rebuild an entire roster through the portal in 1 year. So I think the Cats win that, and of course I think the Cats will beat Kansas. My gosh, I got them to what, 9-3?
Yes. I think so.
Yeah, that all relying on the fact that I think they will lose one of those games at Iowa State or TCU, and then come home and beat Texas and Oklahoma State. Texas and Oklahoma State. Cole, what do you think of those final three?
Yeah, I'm with you on all three of those games. I think what makes this schedule so interesting as a whole is that there's a lot of teams where you look at the schedule and you say, K-State should win this game, and you feel really comfortable about it. But then you have those games like Iowa State where it's like, you know, we think they're going to lose, but they can definitely win. Perhaps that game could be even an easier game for K-State than, say, Oklahoma State at home, right? And, you know, Fitz, you and I both have K-State winning that game. So I'm with you. I think K-State will lose to Baylor. They'll beat West Virginia and beat Kansas, finish at 9-3. And quite honestly, I almost feel like that if you were to, you know, to ask people, hey, what is your record for K-State? Where do you have them at? I would imagine the median right now is probably 9-3. And I know Zach, you're probably going to be a little bit below that just because.
Yeah, I made a face.
He made a face. It was a significant face he made.
I just feel like, I mean, the median right now is 9-3, maybe the higher median. Is that even a math term?
Yeah.
I don't know. But
Stick to social studies.
Yeah.
I'll say 9-3 with the potential to, if you steal the win, if you're 10-2, I feel confident that K-State's playing in Arlington. But if you're 9-3, I mean, that's still, depending upon how the conference shakes out, not out of the question.
I think the finish for me is the same as you guys. Lose at Baylor, beat West Virginia, beat KU.
So
8-4.
Yeah, you're pessimistic, but you still have them at
8-4.
What's interesting to me is 6-3 in the conference may not get you to Arlington. It depends on who you beat and how everyone else stacks up, but that may not get it done. So, if K-State wants to be in Arlington for the championship game, which more and more we're seeing kind of some national media beginning to realize, hey, this is actually a pretty good K-State team. You know, they always seem to sleep on K-State. I think with Adrian Martinez coming in, the optimism around him, and we're hearing pretty good reviews of him. We will find out if he gathers himself and Colin Klein can get him on track. I think this team could be in Arlington, but 6-3 in the conference may not do it. So even Cole and I being optimistic, if you want to say it that way, at 9-3 overall, may not get him to the championship game. We'll see.
I think it's funny how we're only one game apart, but we have two different outlooks, I guess.
Yeah. Yeah, and
but even then, I could probably say, you know, I'm probably a little optimistic with that one extra game. I'd still probably pick them at 7-5.
Again, it's time for this program to climb on top of some of these programs that have offered an opportunity to go below K-State in the pecking order, and that includes Iowa State and TCU. That certainly includes West Virginia. So K-State needs to climb over those programs. They're already probably above Tech and certainly Kansas, and definitively let them know that this is the way it's going to be moving forward, and then back that up with a big recruiting class. So it's going to be a fun year.
Next question is from Colcats3. How do you feel about the first three kickoff times announced, with two out of the three games being on ESPN Plus?
Doesn't shock me. You know, the ESPN Plus bought the rights to the Tier 3 rights for most of the conference, and that'd probably be the South Dakota game. But it gets confusing because then now they just use it as a platform to put on other games. So if, you know, if you had the Big Ten Network, you sold your rights to Tier 3 rights to the Big Ten Network, you might have that game on there and a couple others. So if you look at ESPN Plus as kind of the Big 12 version of a network, it doesn't bother me that much. I think people are getting acclimated to it. And I think Zach and I pretty much called the kickoff times.
Yeah. I got the Missouri network wrong, but
I didn't.
See, I figured that that Fox would want an SEC team on their network.
Yeah, it must come down to pecking order on that weekend of picking. So, yeah, they've got South Dakota 6 p.m. on ESPN Plus. Then the following Saturday, September 10th, the following Saturday, September 10th, 11 a.m. Missouri on ESPN Deuce Vaughn. September 17th, 2 p.m. Tulane. I love it. Bill Snyder Family Stadium. It is Fort Riley Day, University Family Day, Cole. So bring your relatives from Kentucky to the Tulane game, because nothing says family like New Orleans.
Here's my question about all of this, and Zach, maybe you know this, or Fitz, maybe you know this better than anyone, but if you're going to have the game on ESPN Plus, specifically I'm talking and referencing this Tulane game, remember how awful and how hot it was against Nevada? Was that not a 2 o'clock kickoff?
It was a 1:30 some kickoff in there.
Are you not running into potentially the same problem here with, you know, heat being an issue when you play this game? If you're going to play it on ESPN Plus, why not play it at 6 o'clock when you know? We talk about local businesses a lot on this podcast, but I mean, people are going to be down here. They're going to have to stay at least for one night. So I don't think so.
If you ask local businesses, those midday kicks are the best for their business because anyone coming to town can drop through the bars or restaurants before kickoff. And then if you're staying, you're staying and you're out all night. So that's probably why they did it. I mean, it's probably a tip of the hat to the local community because it is so good for the businesses.
So the first game is that kind of family reunion type game. You know, every year for the last however many years, probably 10 years, that would be my guess, is that first home game or the reunion game, so to speak, is a night game. They always lead off the season, 6 o'clock. It's late August, early September. It's hot. They do it there. But then I believe that other game, you know, your non-marquee game that's getting selected for television, like the Mizzou game, you know, your Nevada game, your, you know, when they played UTEP or, you know, whoever in the past, Tulane this year, you know, I think that's kind of a coach's pick or a, you know, where does Chris Klieman want to play that game? And I think that he's probably in the same mindset of Bill Snyder saying, hey, let's play this, you know, early afternoon, mid-afternoon. You know, it's good for the local community. You know, you don't have to spend a night. You can drive in 4 hours, watch the game, drive out 4 hours, and still, you know, wherever you are in Kansas or in the surrounding states or areas, if you're a K-State fan, a 2 o'clock game is a very attainable drive if you want to get there. So I think that that's kind of the way they look at it. But I like when K-State plays on ESPN Plus, especially from basketball. It's way better than playing on ESPNU. It's way better than playing on ESPN News. You get to log in, pay $7 a month or whatever you're paying annually, $70, I don't know. You get to do that instead of trying to look up your cable provider, see if you're paying for ESPNU, because ESPNU, at least with Cox and some other cable providers, it's an add-on. You have to buy the sports tier, or maybe even a higher tier sports tier than what you want to pay anyway. So I think that, yes, it's frustrating that you can't channel surf and nobody's going to end up on a ESPN Plus game. But as far as being a fan, I love it. I love being able to just log into ESPN Plus, especially with basketball. We got into this with basketball. You know, I'd rather them play on ESPN Plus than trying to illegally stream ESPN U or ESPN News, you know.
Well, this
it's ridiculous.
I'm just looking at K-State's schedule on their website. And, you know, they note underneath what the name of the game is, what the promotion is. No family reunion this year.
Interesting.
It is the Ahern Fund member appreciation. So if you haven't donated, you're not appreciated as much. Mm. But that's okay. That's okay. And it's also the extra yard for teachers, unless it's Cole Carmody. I don't know why they added you to that. I think that's mean, Cole, but I don't know what extra yard for teachers means or what will be done, but the teachers deserve whatever. The Missouri game is the All-Star Marching Band, which kind of sounds like a traveling marching band. But I'm sure it has K-State's marching band involved. I'm sure it's just Band Day with a different name. Tulane is Fort Riley Day and University Family Day. So apparently the university has an entire family. Like, I don't know, like Fort Hayes is its cousin and it'll be coming. I'm not sure. Texas Tech is Celebrate Ag Day. Well, we haven't done that before. That's good. Oklahoma State is Homecoming and the Varsity K Club Weekend. Texas is Harley Day. So that probably means they'll lose. And then, of course, the Dillon's Sunflower Showdown Senior Day against Kansas, also known as the Battle for John Brown's Musket. I'm trying.
I'm trying, man.
That's amazing.
Next question.
The last thing. Oh, sorry, Zach. I just want to point out one more thing here. Looking at the schedule for week two, because we didn't get a chance to talk about the Mizzou game at all, really, at all. Does anybody want to take a guess at the other big 11 a.m. game for September 10th?
No, I don't. Just tell us.
Is that the Texas-Alabama?
Alabama and Texas.
Yeah, I'm going to take that one in the viewership ratings.
This is probably going to be number two at 11 a.m., but complaining about K-State, Missouri, 11 a.m. I actually think it's a good time for Wentworth. So, anyways, just wanted to point that out there.
Okay, Zach, I'm calling an audible. We're two questions in. You said we have eight, and we're at roughly 30 minutes. I'm kind of lost count, but we got to be near the halfway mark. So instead of doing 4-4, we're going to do 2-6. We've covered the schedule. We talked about each game. We talked about the TV times for the first three games, and now we're going to go to break. This is the Power Cat Questions podcast, sponsored by The Fridge Wholesale Liquor. Join us on the other side, where we have literally more of your questions from Wabash Station.
GoPowerCat.com's PowerCat podcast continues after this short break.
The baseball season is in full swing, which means you need to listen to Fantasy Baseball Today, part of the CBS Sports Podcast Network. Join Scott White, Chris Towers, and me, Frank Stample, every weekday as we recap every player from every game. We'll talk waiver wire ads, drops, players to trade for, prospects who could make an impact, and everything in between. Make sure to download and follow on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, the Odyssey app, and everywhere else podcasts are found.
Hello, everyone. It's Mike Richards here. You might have seen me on CBS working on their Champions League coverage over the last couple of years. I wanted to tell you about an exciting new podcast that I've been working on. It's called The Rest Is Football. It's me, alongside Gary Lineker and Alan Shearer, two absolute legends of the game. The show combines topical debate from the world of soccer along with outrageous tales from our careers. And I mean outrageous. Just search The Rest Is Football wherever you get your podcasts. All the best from Big Meats.
Welcome back to the Power Cat Podcast. Now, let's return to the GPC studios.
Welcome back to the Power Cat Questions Podcast, sponsored by Fridge Wholesale Liquor. We do this every week at GoPowerCat.com. Our subscribers at Wabash Station ask the questions. We answer the questions right here on this podcast. And this week it is myself, Tim Fitzgerald, Zach Carlson, and Cole Carmody via the phone in Kansas City. We've only done two of our eight questions for this week because we were very long-winded. And now we continue with your questions from Wabash Station. And once again, a big shout out to The Fridge, who have been with us for many years. Take it away, Zach.
Next question is from PowerCat Ryan. Which of the following Big 12 versions was slash is slash will be your favorite? Version 1.0 with the original 12, version 2.0 with the original 12 minus Colorado and Nebraska, version 3.0, which is the current version with the remaining 10 minus Texas A&M and Missouri with the addition of TCU and West Virginia, version 4.0, current 10 plus Houston, UCF, BYU, and Cincinnati. Then there's version 5.
Oh.
With the new 14 minus Oklahoma and, well, the 14, the minus Oklahoma and Texas to get you back down to 12.
Oh, so we
right.
Four is the 14 teams.
Right.
Okay.
And then five is the new four teams minus OU Texas. Okay. Then six is a potential 12, the new 12 plus four other teams to get to 16.
Oh, this is a great question, Ryan. It really is. It's going to make me think. I like the first 12. The first 12 was a great conference. It really was. I mean, you think about the loss of Missouri and Nebraska, just longtime rivals of Kansas State, along with Colorado from the old Big Eight. Could really care less about them. Couldn't care less. Couldn't
I want them back.
You just want them back for the mountains and everything.
The mountains.
And A&M was fun until we all figured out it's a cult, and then we got a little scared. I really like the new 12 version. I think that's five in there of no Oklahoma, Texas with the four newcomers. I think it's a nice refreshment of the conference. There's one school in there I probably wouldn't have added just out of personal preference, and it's somewhere in Texas. But I do like the three out of Texas they picked, and I think it's going to be a really competitive conference, a really entertaining conference. And I don't think the quality of football will drop off significantly, particularly if someone such as Kansas State, Oklahoma State, or Baylor, being the three most likely, can rise up to get back to that elite standing that K-State was at once and Baylor briefly was. Oklahoma State's been there, which means your quality to be in the playoffs like Oklahoma's been.
Mine's probably going to be the one year where they didn't have Colorado, Nebraska, but they still had Missouri and Texas A&M. That, and if it happens, the one year or 2 years where OU and Texas are still in and there's a 14-team conference. Those will be the 2 years that I... or two versions that I appreciate the most.
Okay. I'm gonna be a rebel on this, and I'm gonna say none of the above. Mm. I'm gonna write in my own answer, and I'm gonna say the Big Eight conference.
Oh,
is that acceptable?
You weren't alive, bud, but okay.
And the only reason I say that is just because of geography, and I don't know. I just think that's really cool how close everybody was in that singular conference.
From Cat and Colo, I assume that's Colorado. Cat and Colo is the name.
Couldn't afford the Ratto.
New to the site. Welcome.
I'll drop by and see you this week.
The potential exists for Cincinnati, Houston, and BYU to all finish in the top half of the Big 12 in both football and basketball when they join. If that were to happen, what would that say about the Big 12 and K-State if they finish below these three schools?
That would stink. That would really – the conference in basketball is going to be better. I'm just going to say that. I mean, you add the likes of Houston, which has been Final Four quality the last few years. BYU is always solid. You know, you just go through the list. UCF has the potential to be really good, even though they haven't been, and Cincinnati's had its moments in basketball. I think the conference is going to be ultra competitive. I think if you're Kansas – I'm not worried about K-State. If you're Kansas – and you find yourself in a realigned conference with four new schools and you get pummeled by them, you're mired. You're stuck. This is a huge year for them to get something going, because if they don't, I have come to believe that Texas and Oklahoma won't be in the conference in 23. They'll figure that out. I've been thinking that all along, that it looked like it would be a couple years, but now there's a lot of talk of them leaving. So if in 2023, Lance Leipold can't get it above the four new teams or whatever teams he plays out of that mix, it's big trouble. But I like the fact that all these teams can be competitive in football from day one.
I think when you look at, you know, we talk about the new conference, as far as a K-State perspective goes, I was going to bring this up when we were looking at the schedule and looking at the games. But that K-State Oklahoma State game, I mean, there could be a lot on the line in that game simply because I think we look at those two teams and you could realistically say, hey, these two teams, if the progression stays the way it is, and maybe if you want to throw Baylor in there, those two or three teams could be the class of the new Big 12 from the old guard, right? So, I mean, I think that K-State has a chance to finish at the top. But again, I think that's why this season is so important in all reality.
I think if Cincinnati shows up in football and they do what they've done over the last, however many seasons, I don't think that you can get too upset if they finish above K-State. But the other two, I think for sure, it'd be disappointing if Houston and BYU came in. And, if they beat K-State, here or there in those early seasons, frustrating, but not the end of the world. But if they're coming in and they're competing in the rest of the conference and they're getting wins, yeah, it's definitely frustrating. With basketball, I think you got to finish above all of them.
Mm-hmm.
I don't think there's any room, especially right now with the state of the program. I get the coaching change. Jerome Tang's going to take this, hopefully, vertical. But if he's not able to compete in the conference as a whole, I don't see how adding Cincinnati, Houston, BYU programs that, like you've said, Fitz, they're at the very least solid. And in Houston's case, they've been very good. So you've got to be able to compete with the rest of the conference as a whole if you want to be successful. And back to the point where K-State fans expect K-State basketball to be.
Well, here we go.
From Oiler Cat 2, does Will Howard get a chance to redshirt this year after he sacrificed his redshirt to play in the Texas game last year? Do you think he would like that opportunity if Adrian Martinez is healthy all season?
Absolutely. If Adrian Martinez is healthy all season, they will try to redshirt Will Howard, which still means he can play in four games. So, that's the game changer. They couldn't pull that off last year. And so maybe they'll get that done this year. They're going to need someone to step up and be a definitive number three, though, just in case. I hope they get the red shirt on him. Will deserves it. He'd be a senior next year. That's crazy. But he does have a COVID year, I guess.
Air quotes.
Yeah. So hopefully they get it done. But I don't see a way Adrian Martinez stays healthy and locked in at quarterback the entire season. I just think he's going to get knocked around a little bit. That's the nature of being a K-State quarterback with that run game. We'll see. But I hope it happens. I just don't think they'll be able to do it.
I think if Will Howard plays this year and forgoes his red shirt for the third year in a row, I think that just tells you what you need to know about Jake Rubley. If you're trying to preserve Will Howard's red shirt, and if Adrian Martinez gets injured and you play Will for four games and you still have, games where Adrian's injured and it comes down to, do we let Will go out there? Because he's clearly the best option outside of Adrian Martinez right now. So if Jake Rubley's not ready to step in when he doesn't have a COVID year to burn, he's used his red shirt last year. It's at the very least, if they do decide to go with Jake Rubley in this scenario, Will Howard could very well be passed if Jake Rubley mm-hmm. is good enough. Because if Jake Rubley's given the keys to the car, and if Will Howard's trying to preserve that red shirt, it could be an interesting situation if it comes down to that.
The question asks is, does Will Howard want to be redshirted and will K-State use his redshirt? I honestly think that no, Will Howard will not be redshirted, not only because you have Adrian Martinez, who is very injury prone in the past, but I do think they're going to find ways to get Will in the game because, let's be honest, guys, Will does things that is different. I mean, he's just different. We saw him take off and run down the field against Texas last year. Say what you want to say about that game, but that was probably one of the most impressive plays of the entire season when Will Howard ran 80 yards past Texas to get to the end zone. And on top of that, you throw in the fact that he's 6'4", 6'5". He's a big kid. I think they're going to find ways to get Will Howard on the field. And I'm not sure Will Howard wants to be redshirted. I mean, you've gone through this yo-yo effect. I mean, if they come to him and say, hey, Will, do you want to have the same role you did last year and maybe keep your redshirt, or do you want to be involved in the game plan? I would have to think that Will, especially having that extra year, I would think he'd want to get into the game. And the only other thing I want to point out here is, you know, it depends on who they have at quarterback and, quite frankly, who they have coming in at quarterback. If they feel comfortable in their quarterback situation, I think that could play into it as well. So I would expect to see Will Howard. I also expected to see Will Howard last year, and we really didn't get to see him as much, partly because they wanted to keep that redshirt. But I think you either don't play him at all and don't even try and risk it, or you get him involved early in the season. And I think if he is involved early in the season, then that'll be a telling sign.
Next question is from Wyatt Bollinger, 15. Start one, bench one, cut one. Michael Bishop, L. Roberson, Colin Klein.
Okay, this is easy for me. It really is. It seems challenging, but I saw this on Twitter, so I've already thought this through. I start Michael Bishop, but I've got Colin Klein on the bench in case Mike has one of those Mike games where he throws interceptions and just doesn't quite look like Mike. And I'm sorry, L, I love you, man, but you're number three in this group. You're going to have to go.
Is he?
I think so. I think it's pretty clear he's number three.
I think you're probably right.
Cole, your thoughts?
It's hard for me because I have not watched those two guys in L. Roberson and Michael Bishop as much as I've watched Colin Klein. And so I want to lean towards starting Colin Klein just because I've seen the kind of player he is. But, I mean, are we going to take into account who's calling plays? I mean, hey, if Colin Klein, the offensive coordinator, is calling plays, maybe it looks a little bit different than if Phil Snyder's calling plays.
I'm going with Michael Bishop.
Michael?
He's my quarterback.
Who's getting cut?
I think L's got to get cut.
I know.
Think you're right.
I know.
I think you're right.
Sorry, L. Sorry.
Yeah, L's getting cut for me, too. I'll go Colin Klein 1, Michael Bishop 2, okay. And L. Roberson 3.
You can't go wrong with either. If your quarterback depth is Bishop and Klein, no matter who starts and who backs up, you're a pretty damn good football team. Those are two great quarterbacks who fit K-State's system just perfectly.
Next question is from CallMeT22. Which team on campus could benefit or do the most with a total uniform redesign? Can be guys, girls, revenue, or obscure?
That's a great
weird question. Weird to call the Olympic sports obscure.
Obscure.
Men's basketball has to be the answer.
I think you're
that
right.
That has to be the answer.
I think they've got one jersey. As I sit here right now, it seems like they've got one jersey. Two jerseys I keep. I keep the Lavenders, and I keep the Wildcat script.
So you keep the throwback / fullbacks.
Right, right. And then I redo the, you know, I get a purple that's better. I don't like all the design work they have on their uniforms. I wouldn't mind a light gray uniform. I think they could do some really cool stuff, but all the swooshes and different colors, and I'm just not into it. I like simple, clean uniforms with some pinstripes, or maybe just a solid pant, a solid short with the Power Cat on the side. I got no problem with that. I just think they get too busy with their designs.
I think that their current designs don't align with the rest of design in college basketball.
Right.
I think that recently we've seen a trend of simple is more, so to speak. And I think that the shorts, especially the black shorts with the Power Cats on the butt, or not the butt, but like the bottom edges of the shorts, they just look weird. I'm going to say this, though. I think that women's sports in general, at least with Nike and probably the other sports too, or other uniform companies, probably Under Armour and Adidas do the same thing, but everything is so templatey. You know, when you look at a volleyball uniform, both teams are, if they're Nike, they're wearing the same uniform in a different color. Same pretty much goes for soccer, women's basketball. Maybe women's basketball has gotten a little bit better over the years, but you look at those sports and you're just like, you could have bought this off a rack, you know, at the uniform store or whatever. You know, there's no thought or design. But at the same time, it's not like very many people are going to those games and watching either. But that's what I would do, is get something more bespoke for those sports.
What about a cream-colored men's basketball jersey? I'm going to take and steal that from baseball, because I don't know if you guys have had a chance to see, but I think baseball does it right. I think baseball does it right. They have a bunch of different jerseys, and quite honestly, I think all of them are great. I think if you were to get a cream-colored basketball jersey, I think TCU does one of those. I don't know if you guys are – you guys can remember what I'm talking about.
No. OU, do OU is who does the cream because it's crimson and cream.
Is that – would that be a good look for K-State, or are you more of a traditional, let's just stick with what the school has?
I think cream's cool, but cream's like an OU thing to me.
Yeah, I'm not
– it's not a K-State
I'd like
thing.
To see it. I'd like to see what it looks like, but I don't know that I'll be in on that.
You could call it Call Hall Cream.
Ooh, I like it.
Ugh.
I also want the big game grays back. I know people are going to crush me for that, and that's probably one of the only opinions – I have a lot of opinions, but that's one of my only opinions that I'll actually die on a hill for, and maybe that's just because I have the nostalgia of Jacob Pullen and the Frank Martin era of wearing those jerseys in huge games and then having major success. But, yeah, I want gray uniforms, and I want to call them the big game grays, so that's what I'm going
to
do.
That's a dumb hill to die on because those uniforms did not look good on television at all.
Thomas Gibson sweated through everyone's uniform.
Problem is they didn't get the colors right for the numerals and the trim. Black trim with purple numerals on dark gray isn't good. Got to go
some
with white.
Some kind of gray jersey would look good.
Purple.
Yeah, I like a lighter gray. I mean, I'd like not a light gray, like a pale gray for
like
a
like the 90s home. Silvers?
Yeah, closer. Yeah.
Close to those? Yeah.
A little more silver.
The Reebok days?
Yeah. Ooh, yeah, now we're talking.
Last question of the podcast, and it is also a uniform question from Itame BB. If I am not mistaken, which he is not, I think Bob Huggins brought the black uniform to K-State. Is there any new color you think Jerome Tang could introduce to the program?
No. Tom Asbury added teal.
But they never wore it on a uniform.
No, I know. Oh, no.
I think they should totally...
No!
Hang on. Hear me out.
Oh, no,
hear
teal.
Hear me out.
Oh.
Hear me out. For one game, you do kind of like a... Almost like a minor league type event. You know how they'll change... Like the Wind Surge or the Turbo Tubs on Thursdays. And they have a different logo and different uniform, you know. Something like that. Do a silly, you know, uniform... For one game or one week in December or something where you have teal uniforms and like, you know, fuchsia security shirt type thing, like just make a whole 90s K-State uniform that never was, but takes from what Bramlage was during that Tom Asbury teal time.
Cole, help me here.
I mean, I was just going to say lavender. And quite honestly, is Jerome Tang popularizing the lavender more because they are going to feature more lavender
I don't think it's necessarily Jerome Tang. I think it's – I could totally see the athletic department trending towards using lavender because it's such a unique color. No one else is using lavender.
No, it is. I love it. And, you know, just going up to athletics for press conferences or anything, you see staff all wearing lavender. It's – they're either wearing – white, purple, or lavender. Like, there's no black left. Very rarely. Someone wore black into a press conference. Was it...
Klannerman, maybe?
Klannerman, yeah.
Yeah, but it's so much more rare now. It's been supplanted by lavender, and I like it. I always... And Gene Taylor said this, and I thought the same, not for football, but, you know, our Twitter friend Mike Stanley does those great mock-ups, and when I see a little bit of lavender... Like on a jersey top with, you know, a white helmet and white pants, it is really clean. It looks really good. I kind of hope the university does it for exactly what Zach said. It is a unique look to Kansas State, period. If you turn on the TV and you see lavender, it's not Northwestern. It's not another purple school. It's Kansas State. It's not TCU. They're the ones with the purple and black. It's K-State. And I really would appreciate seeing more and more of it in all sports. I think it's a really popular color with the fan base and really popular with the younger crowd, which I think is really interesting.
I could see
K-State.
Sorry, yeah. Go Cole.
Okay, I was just going to say, one thing that K-State needs to do if they want to make the lavender more popular is make it not just an athletics thing. Fitz, you just mentioned, athletics wears the lavender a lot. But the lavender is not around the university. What's around the university? You have the purple, you have the Power Cat. It is what we think of with K-State. Now, they have not gotten into that trend. The university has not fully gone into the trend of the lavender. So I think if you want to include the lavender more, you have to see it more around campus for it to really feel like it's an actual color of the school. Because right now when you see lavender, it's kind of just that, oh, yeah, we want lavender jerseys. We want a lavender this. We want lavender. You have to make it part of your culture for it to actually make it a school color.
Should it officially be added as a school color?
I think it should. Royal purple is the only school color right now,
right,
officially. I think you should add lavender. If you're going to add a color, add lavender, in my opinion. But if you want a realistic jersey that's a random color that I think K-State could end up wearing, Nike does a Native American kind of appreciation type jersey that's turquoise that OU, Oklahoma State, you know, a lot of Florida State, New Mexico. Kansas definitely has some Native American heritage, and there's places in Kansas that are, you know, I could totally see Nike extending that at some point to K-State and wearing a turquoise jersey if they wanted to out of that initiative. But I always thought that the Nike N7 thing's pretty cool.
Zach, no social studies lessons are allowed on the podcast. Do you remember this?
That's true.
Well, it's only okay if I do it because I'm not a social studies teacher.
Thank you, Cole, for joining us. That's it for the Power Cat Questions podcast. Thanks for listening. We appreciate the fridge. We appreciate all of our listeners. If you're not subscribing to our podcast, go ahead and check that box, whether you're on Apple, Spotify, or my favorite, Amazon. That's right. I'm an Amazon guy. Love you, Jeff Bezos.
Thank you for listening to the Power Cat Podcast. Make sure you're subscribing to our show at Apple, Spotify, Amazon, or wherever you get your podcasts. Power Cat Podcast. All rights reserved. GoPowerCat.com.
CBS Wednesday.
We have so many cool, diverse people from different backgrounds, different beliefs, different upbringings, and it just keeps growing. I feel
it in my soul. I'm a citizen of the United States.
I'm a hustler.
I'm a big Taylor Swift fan.
I'm the queen of the tribe. I'm a
survivor. I am playing whatever role I gotta play.
I'm gonna play this game full speed.
I ain't going down like no punk.
A new Survivor, Wednesday on CBS and streaming on Paramount+.